Welcome to Soul of an Empath, the podcast that helps empaths to feel loved, seen, heard, and understood in all areas of your life. Now here's your host, Tiffany Cano.
We are back for another Soul of an Empath podcast. I'm Tiffany Cano, and we have one of my favorite peoples in the whole world on the show today, Allison Armstrong. So let me tell you a little bit about her. And this is from my perspective, right? I've known her for 12 years. I've been on the phone with her bi-weekly for 12 years. I love this woman. She originally was introduced to me through my cousin who bought one of her books about making sense about men. And at the time, I was clueless about it, right? And so Allison has been sharing her gifts with the world for over 30 years, teaching transformation workshops, teaching about men and women and how to have healthier, happier, more joyful, loving communication and partnership. And not only with romantic partners, but her work has rippled out to help parents and children, to help people in the workplace. I've done her year-long program 3 years in a row to learn her topics and concepts and incorporate it into my own life and business. And she has many, many online programs, books, audios, you name it, to give you access to greater partnership. And I just love her. So thank you, Allison, for being on the show today.
My pleasure. I'm so excited to do this with you. I'm excited just to hang out.
I know. We don't have to do anything. We could just be.
Has it really only been 12 years?
In this life. Could have been longer, but 12 years. Because it was 2009 when we first started playing together.
I just thought it was longer ago, but I don't remember when you first reached out to help me because of that surgery I was going to have. And I didn't know you well at the time, and I didn't know why I was telling you I was going to have to do that. And then all of a sudden I ended up in your world. And yeah, and you changed my life. And that was the beginning of everything.
Yes. We each have had the blessing to contribute to each other. And I love being able to help facilitate healing for you and your business and your family. And I love the teachings that you've provided me that have enhanced my relationships personally and professionally and my family relationships. So thank you very, very much. So Allison, I know that you also identify as being an empath. What does that look like and feel like to you?
Wow. I didn't know what one was. I was thinking about this, right? Like, so when did I first become aware? There was this moment when I was just sitting in a courtyard and there was a man on the other side. It was like I think it was when I was in college, and he was going down the hallway and he had a raincoat on, right? So I'm sitting on the other side of the courtyard and I'm watching him. He's wearing a raincoat and it's raining out. And I don't know. I was just being there. And then I felt his raincoat as if it were on my shoulders. I didn't know how that could happen. And I didn't tell anybody about it for years. And then as I started teaching women how to understand men, and it took a long time to realize that I was feeling the pain that they had about it. The pain, the anger, the hurt from their past, and that I was absorbing it. I was absorbing all of that emotion, and I was going home just wiped out from it. It took a long time to realize I needed to release it. And I had a sinus infection for 7 years.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I'd get one, I'd take antibiotics, I'd get over it, I'd get another one, I'd take more antibiotics. I had no idea what I was doing to my body with the antibiotics. And then it was before I knew you, and she had me do an exercise, a right hand, left hand exercise where I asked my sinuses, what is your purpose? And when I was writing with my left hand, right, my non-dominant hand, what came out was, our purpose is to protect you from the emotions you don't want to feel. And it became clear that they weren't my emotions. It was literally like I was breathing in the emotions of all these people, and they were just like blocking it, like the mucus was just trapping all that emotion so that I didn't have to feel what they were feeling. And two things came out of it. One was sinus hour, is what we called it, which was a pledge to, for every day, to serve myself first.
Ooh, that's a good one. Mm-hmm.
And then the other was to release that emotion. So I would go lead a big event, have all this, everything pour out. And then I would go home and I'd turn on the shower. I'd have white sage in one hand and lemongrass in the other, because somebody told me one was for the masculine and one was for the feminine. So I'd light them. I would get into the shower and I would twirl. So I had these smoky, right? So I'm twirling inside of the smoke under the shower. And then I would put my head back like the guy in the Green Mile, when he absorbed the evil from other people. And so I put my head back. And so I'm twirling and going, ah. And then when I was done, I would just say, I'd taken them in, I'd done my work, I'd released it. Now they're back to you guys. And I stopped having sinus infections.
Good job. Way to be aware of it and take the time to ask your body, what's going on?
Yeah. What are you doing here? And then, like, it's shown up in other ways, as you know, because I did highly sensitive people. And as you're describing what I, you know, I refer to them as the clairs, right? And clairvoyant and clairaudient and clairsentient, right? Which clairsentient, you know, we associate, I think, with being an empath. We feel what other people feel. And as you were naming them, it was what it was causing in me was to remember my first memory of that. When I was little, I knew things I wasn't supposed to know. And then as I started actively helping people to heal, and they didn't want to name their pain, because to name it was to feel it more intensely just by the naming of it. But I could hear the word they weren't saying. And therefore I could offer to them, may I offer you something? And then I would use that word in saying, I'm sorry they hurt you when they, and I'd say the word, or I'm sorry they crushed you. First time I heard a man not saying that. He was not saying I was crushed. And so that's when I became aware of that, a different kind of empathy.
So after you took my workshop, that's when things heightened, where you could hear and feel them more. But
well, what happened, so when in the middle of the workshop, when you were naming them, right? So clairaudient, clairsentient, clairvoyant, claircognizant. And then I found out there's the other one, the taste and smell. And I teased that I had five clairs, because I was, you know, clairvoyant, clairaudient, clairsentient, and claircognizant. And then there's my daughter, Claire. So I remembered each one. I didn't know that. I didn't know that about myself. I knew about this feeling. I knew about the empathy, but I didn't know about the rest. In your workshop, I got to remember becoming aware of each one of those. And I actually got to see how I used them unconsciously, and in some cases consciously, but not very many. And you know this, but it's worth saying, is what highly perceptive people provided for me was a way to talk about it, b, all those memories that I, you know, didn't, and I was not aware of that, c, owning it, especially because the exercises that we did that had me realize the degree of accuracy. Right? You do some things in the workshop where I was stunned at the degree of accuracy, the precision, right? Which of course I've come to own. And then what I got, that I could trust the senses and what I needed to be on guard for. And I talked to so many people about it since then is timing and permission, that I needed to pay attention to timing and permission, that just because I know something, whether I heard it, felt it, saw it, whatever, right? However I knew it, that just because I knew it didn't mean the other person was ready to or wanted to know it, or this was a good time for them. And it happened with my best friend because she was talking about her dad and I got a message from her dad while she was talking. And I just blurted it out. And she was so not ready for that, right? She was in her own grief about her father and not ready to hear something from her father. I didn't ask permission and I didn't ask if this was a good time. And I didn't feel into whether or not this was a good time.
I've made that oops before too.
Well, I love the term butthurt. You can't be butthurt if someone says no. I am feeling something. I'm hearing something. I'm becoming aware of something that might serve you. Do you want to know what it is? And is this a good time? And really that it's okay they say no. It's their life. It's their space. We don't just plop something in someone's face. That's rude. And there's a kind of arrogance about, I've been given this knowingness, so aren't I supposed to tell these people? No, not always. That's the thing. One of the things I really appreciate, right? So I got to understand it, accept it. These are human abilities. I'm not a freak. And I need to own them and be responsible for them and then not assume that everything I hear needs to be or see or feel needs to be told. And sometimes I don't have enough a sense of the person to ask. And so I will muscle test. And I'll muscle test. Usually it's not very precise, but it works anyway. Should I tell them? Should I tell them now? And then my favorite is, will I be glad I did? That's why I like tester. Will I be glad I did? Sometimes the answer is no. It's like, okay, is this wholly ecological? No. Do I understand what the cost will be? No. Okay, so I'm flying blind here. Something bad's going to happen. Just shut up, Allison. Just keep it to yourself. I don't know what the cost is going to be. I'm not going to be happy about it. There definitely will be a cost. And hold your pee, girl. Just hold your pee.
So you've been cultivating that muscle. How else has being empathic served you and also perhaps been a challenge for you in regards to romantic partnerships?
Oh my gosh. It's not good if someone doesn't trust you, because knowing what I could know and feeling what I could feel with somebody who preferred to be unaware and they had a kind of nakedness around me. One time it came out in a poem about a man's relationship to his children, that his pain about his distance from his children was carefully protected and not revealed to anybody. And I knew it. Like, oh my gosh, this is his underbelly. And it came out in a poem. And when I shared the poem with him, he acknowledged that it was true. And he took some steps to start communicating to his children how important they were to him, but he was not happy to be seen into that way. But then another time, and how come I got moved, was I just had this thought that Dan would enjoy the work of Dr. Michael Bruce, The Power of When. I sent him the link to it. You know, you might be interested in this. He'd said something about sleeping or not sleeping or whatever. There wasn't even pressure or anything. I like this. And then I get back this message, I'm a bear. With a little emoji, you know, a little of a bear. And it has to do with our hormones and when they release in our body and cause sleepiness and horniness and focus and social ability and all that stuff. And he said, I'm a bear. And that fit with the pattern of when he wanted to talk to me and didn't want to talk to me. Right. So that was like, cool. But then I don't know what made me do it. It was just, he didn't, like, from a personality standpoint, I know a lot of bears and he didn't remind me of them. I reached, right? He's 200 miles away and I reached into him and I didn't have permission to do it. I didn't know him, right? But I reached and I had this really intense physical mental experience of an eagle. And I felt the wings, the shoulders. I felt this incredible strength in the eagle's neck. And I saw through the eagle's eyes, like I saw how his mind works. I saw how he thought, right? And, but it was just this like, right? This eagle, right? And it had, and it took a long time to replay and re-feel and re-see all the things that came in like an instant. And I had texted back to him, that's interesting. You feel like an eagle. And I got this text back. Wow, that's what I was picturing when I sent you the text about the band, that I'm an eagle, right? According to this, I'm a bear, but I'm an eagle. And so when I spoke to him, my first thing I did was I apologized. I said, I'm so sorry. I went snooping around in your body without permission. Can I tell you what else I experienced? And so I told him about, I was in your brain and I could see how you think. I said, you scan and then you spot, but you're not like a seagull. You don't dive. You analyze. And I've watched him do this now for almost a year, right? Scan, spot, and he doesn't dive. He analyzes. He thinks, he researches, he studies, he makes notes. So if you can imagine beginning a relationship like that, and then I, you know, and I told him all about like what I felt in his neck and his shoulders, and that I didn't understand the strength that I felt in his neck. It didn't make sense to me. And then he explains to me that two of his vertebrae are fused with cadaver bone.
That could explain it. Yes. So what advice would you give couples where one person is clearly empathic and the other person not so much?
I don't know what you think, and this is so much more your area than mine. I think human beings are empathic. I think we have senses that someday science will validate, that there are frequencies we're perceiving on, you know, we think they're weird or freaky or that shit was just made up. But I'm convinced, I mean, things like heart math have started be able to validate our senses, and that someday it'll just be more like, so what's your strong suit? And Suzanne Giesemann's work, I really appreciate, right? Because she teaches evidentiary mediumship, and her attitude towards the ability to communicate with people who've left their bodies is just, well, this is just a human ability. You just have to tune in to the frequency. They're on a different frequency. You tune in and they're there. They're hoping to communicate. And so to me, it's like learning languages. Like some people think they're, you know, they're visual or they're auditory or they're kinesthetic. Well, I took the same attitude about learning languages, that they're just frequencies. And it's kind of like turning the radio on and it's, you know, everything's coming through in Spanish. And then if you keep going, I don't understand that, you keep going and you find something in the language you understand, then that's just what you keep knowing in. But if you, honestly, if you stick to a Spanish station after a while, you get it.
You'll start speaking the language. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like you get it. And so like, you and I both know Michelle, right? And Michelle identifies with being very kinesthetic. And I teased her that it's like champagne bubbles that have to make it all the way from her toes through every part of her body and her organs before it gets up to the place where it comes out of her mouth. And by then it's been filtered for truth the entire time. So anything that comes out of her mouth is like, seriously, we wish we had water that was filtered as well as her thoughts. And I caught on to that when she spoke, it was priceless. I never identified with being kinesthetic. So I would just wait. I'd ask her a question and I would just wait. Well, I'm a girl though. We do things meanwhile. So meanwhile, waiting for her to say something, I just started to see, well, is my body trying to tell me anything? So I tuned in to my body. And that's when I started experiencing whole new levels of empathy, because I tuned into that. And so in a couple that where someone is more sensitive as an empath or thinks they're more empathic than their partner. Unfortunately, because we're human, right? We're competitive naturally. You know, so I'm better at this than you, right? I'm stronger at this than you. I have something you don't have. That's just a natural place to go. And we can invalidate the other person because obviously I'm more perceptive than you. And anyway, you know, I know more than you. I've studied more than you. I've had more relationships than you. Any way that we invalidate another person, including ourselves, right, is not going to go well in relationship. I just find it helpful to take a different point of view. Well, I've just tuned into that channel a lot. I've just tuned in, and anybody can tune in. And there are people who tuned in way more than me, like you, for example. So, yeah. Hello, 6 hours a day. What does she do? Tunes in exclusively.
Yes, my entire healing career is about tuning in. So it's more about being able to tune out as needed. And that's been one of the biggest skills that I think I've been helping everybody else with, is learning how to turn off or turn the volume down so that it's not blaring on all cylinders 24/7.
Remember our first interaction about that when we were in a partnership?
Remind me.
We were working with the horses, learning to hold space. And you were talking, you were having trouble being there because others were talking to you. You're getting all these messages. And I looked at you. I remember exactly what you said. I looked at you and I said, you can have office hours.
Yes, I remember that. So I started having a deal with my spirit guides and angels about office hours, such as, please don't wake me up in the middle of the night unless it's an emergency. Please save that wisdom and insight for when I'm in session with the person that you're talking to me about. Man, that was a really good boundary that I never even thought of before you said office hours. I remember even feeling a little twisted because it triggered me. I was like, what? What? How can I be of service and have office hours? But now I love it. It took some time, but I really have found the value there.
I mean, you were talking about relationships, and that's back when you were dating. And it's troublesome to be on a date and you're getting... You're getting interrupted.
Their body's talking to me. Their chakras are talking to me.
Their guides are talking to you.
Exactly. Their higher soul is talking to me. I'm like, shut up. Let me just be with the person.
Well, I actually learned that from the second download, right? So this whoosh of information.
Mm-hmm.
The first download I was aware of happened when I was on an airplane. And I asked a question, whoosh. Right? A whole schematic for an entire thing that took me 2.5 years to fulfill. But I did. And then the second time I got a download, I was just falling to sleep. I'd asked the question. I didn't know I was triggering these things by the intensity of my question and how aligned my question was with my purpose, right? That I was like, I needed the answer to this. And I was falling asleep, or I was asleep, and I was woken up in the middle of the night again with an entire business plan. And it took me 3 hours to type it up. And I was an insomniac for like 2 years afterwards. I was afraid to fall asleep.
All the whoosh and creation energy just didn't shut off at night. I had that until the office hours.
I was terrified. Yeah. And I blocked all of it out. Like I couldn't go to sleep because I didn't want to be woken up until it occurred to me. Could you tell me in the morning? I need sleep. Thank you. I started praying for sleep. Thank you, God, for sleep. Thank you. Right. And for everything being saved till morning. Timing and permission, which the back of the hand, timing and permission is, we get to have timing and permission too. We get to have boundaries. Not now. I'm having sex. Not now.
Yes. Yes. I do that when I'm meditating also. I'm like, please save that for when I'm done. Okay. Back to meditation. Yeah. I love this work. And I'm also curious about your parenting class and like what kind of tips might you offer for parents who maybe aren't very empathic or don't identify as that, but they have a child that might be? Because I think there's a lot more empathic kids that are awakening as empathic now currently in the world than there were even 10 or 20 years ago.
I'm going to borrow from what the class I did a couple months ago called Empowered Parenting. If you think about as a child wanting to be heard and wanting to be seen and even wanting to be adored, that you're held in the highest esteem and respect and love, right? That you're adored. And often as babies, we experience that we're adored. Parents mostly, if you know this about, you know, how I've been studying human beings, that if you look at it from a point of view of that, maybe there's a hierarchy of instincts and that procreate trumps everything. And then protect, once you create something, you're going to protect it. And then once it's protected, then you can provide for it. But it's in that order. It's procreate, then protect, then provide. And as a parent, if you just consider and you look at your parents, like if everybody just think about your parents and imagine they have created you and now they spend almost all their time at the level of instinct called protect. And the first thing they're on guard for is to protect you from your environment, protect you from everything that's outside of you that could hurt you, that could harm you, right? And oh my gosh, hypervigilant about that. And if you consider my assertion that newborn babies leave their bodies when they fall asleep, they go home, they return to spirit, and they're absent from their bodies. And that's why we're scared. And we go pay attention to their breathing because we can feel their absence, right? And when they wake up, you can see like their bodies are too little and they're going, right? Like they're trying to fit their spirits back in their body every time they wake up. And it takes them a couple months to work this out. But we're always afraid that they're going to die. They're breathing. And so we're hypervigilant for external threats. But then there's a point at which we see threats to the child from within the child, that we see a threat to the child from their own character, from their own behavior, from their own preferences. We project that into the future and that something terrible is going to happen to them because of that quality or behavior or character that they have. And so we're so scared of the consequences of that to them that we try to change it and squish it and suppress it, or don't let anybody say that about you because they won't think of you well. You won't be accepted in the herd or the pack. You won't, you know, you'll be attacked for that, right? So we see first threats externally and then threats internally, right? And then the last to come is that we see threats from the child to us as a parent, that they're wasting my time, they're wasting my energy, they're wasting my resources. Right? They're taking from me. So now we're going to protect ourselves from the child. So protect external, protect from who they are themselves, protect myself from them. For sure, the last two, right? Communicate, there's something wrong with you, there's something wrong with you, there's something wrong with you. They do not communicate the highest esteem and respect and love. The message, you're not okay. You're not all right. This is dangerous. This is bad. Hide it. And you have a child who is like, mommy, why is that man angry? What man? That man. He's not angry. Oh yeah, he's angry. You can't possibly know that, but I do, right? Right?
I always knew what everyone was feeling and thinking.
Yeah. And it's one of the things that we propose in Lux. What if we started with the assumption that every single thing about ourselves has innate value, even if we don't know what it is? What if every single thing, what we think of as our peculiarities, our weaknesses, our flaws, what if every one of them has value? And what if that's true about our young people too? Every single thing about them. And it reminds me, Tiffany, of, you know, Kim.
Which one?
Kim Kavanaugh is a school psychologist, right? Her job is to evaluate and create programs to support not normal children. And she and I have had conversations about children on the autism spectrum, whether it's the far end, what gets labeled attention deficit disorder, it's the other far end, right? Autism, and then back it up, you know, to all the things that we call it, high functioning Asperger's and all that stuff. And I asked her about it. What is her point of view about this? And you mentioned lots of really sensitive children being born, empathic children being born. And it turned out that she and I had the same point of view about children on the autism spectrum, that humanity needs them. We need a new perception. We need a new way of thinking. We need people who solve problems differently. All the children and all the variations that people are treating as aberrant, we need them. That's why they're being born to us now. There's a good reason for it. What is the gift that they have for humanity? What if it's not a flaw? What if it's their strength? What if it's their gift? What if it's what we need it? We need that level of perception, that level of focus. They're not too sensitive. They're perfectly sensitive. What are they telling us that we need to hear? You know, so all of this, like, I wish as a parent we took the same vow that we take in marriage. We don't keep it in most marriages, to love, honor, and cherish, right? If we're going to love, honor, and cherish, we're not going to validate what's there.
My inner child just had one of those, like, ooh, you know, about love, honor, and cherish, just how fulfilling and uplifting and joy-filled that thought is. Gosh, that would save adults lots of therapy if parents brought that kind of an energy into it. Yeah, I love that.
Yes, and fortunately, it's never too late. What if we made that vow to ourselves?
Yes.
Even if you don't understand, you're being empathic, right? Or how come you can hear what people are thinking? Instead of what's wrong with me, oh, this is me. Okay, now that I've acknowledge this is me. So do I need to protect myself from this? Do I need to protect other people from this? Do I need to protect it from other people? Timing and permission are a really good way to protect and not just blurt and announce, you know, hold your pee, timing and permission. I very rarely reveal this about myself because it's not necessary. I just offer what I have to offer, and I don't cite the source, right? Sometimes I'll just say, can I offer something to you? Or I'm getting the feeling that, right? Or does this word fit for you? Because it's about serving them. It's not about how do I know this, right? There isn't attention on how do I know this. There's just, is the knowing of this useful to you? I mean, so much about what we perceive, we need to not be right about it. We need to not be committed that it's true. We need to not have to have it validated. We need it to be okay that we got it wrong, and to honor that, you know, that doesn't fit at all. Okay.
Yeah. It's a humble place to come from.
You have to, or you don't get to contribute, right? You don't get to have that experience of you just unlocked their world. Right? That little thing that you said, unlock their world. If you're all about, look how I unlock worlds, the end, you hardly get to make any difference at all. And I know you've heard me say this, Tiffany. What if every one of us is special ordered?
We are.
Yeah, that we are the way that we are, not to be egotistical about it. We are the way that we are because we're needed. And decades ago, I flipped around that statement, right? To whom much is given, from much is expected. That's like something that Lord say to their children. You are a princess. Much is expected of you, right? To whom much is given, but from whom much is expected. What if it's the other way around? What if from whom much is expected, to whom much is given? What if we have the so-called talents we have because we committed to in being here, even if we're not aware of the contract, that we committed to a purpose and we're being given whatever we need to fulfill the purpose. And it's not personal. It's congruent. It's coherent. It's in the integrity of the whole picture.
Yes. it feels good as you're saying this, like it resonates so strongly as truth. And, you know, empaths, we're bullshit meters. We know. We absolutely know when someone is saying the truth or a lie, and even what percentage, right? At least for me, like I know someone just said 92% truth and 8% bullshit. Like, I got it nailed. But all of that really, really fit. And I know you guys are loving Allison speak, and she has so much more to offer and give you with her online programs and workshops coming up. So Allison, can you give us some insight as to how we can best connect with you, keep learning, keep growing, keep loving? Share with us how to connect.
For many people, the easiest way to connect, but that's not the best way to connect. Easy way is you go to Audible and you put Allison Armstrong in there and you're like, "Wee, look at all these things." And they're great. I stand by them. And I haven't put anything on Audible since 2013, which means there's nothing on Audible that was created since 2012. And I've never stopped studying men and women and human behavior and all these things that you opened my world to, right? So all of the best stuff, the new stuff, it's just so much richer and more complete, is on our website, right? Like the Understanding Women on Audible is this sliver of who women are. Does it make a difference? Absolutely. But the Understanding Women online course at AllisonArmstrong.com, like, all of a sudden it's a whole world. So that's the place to go. It's where our online curriculum is. It's where we have a bunch of free stuff. It's where the Queen's Code is and where the audiobook will be soon. And it's where LUX is, which stands for Liberation, Understanding, and Extraordinary Relationships. And I am so in love with that material because it's, yes, it reflects on gender, and that's useful, but it's who are we and what's actually happening in so-called relationships that we can choose, that we can control. We're trying to control all these things we can't control. We're trying to script other people, and we can't control any of that. As near as I can tell, there are only three things we can control, and one of them is not our bowels. Sorry, but we can choose. We can choose what we're being, how we're being. We can choose what we're listening for. What is the question? What is the filter that's creating our reality? Because it does filter. And what are we speaking to cause, right? And speaking includes our words and our attitudes and our level of pressure, which may be too much or too little, right? 40 years of transformation and 30 years of studying men and women, those are the three things that we have a say over in relationship. It's why the healing work that people engage in is so powerful, because it can profoundly alter how we're being, right? And being is the universal language. Being is what communicates the most. And I think that's where it connects with empaths. We see being, we feel being, we hear being. So even when we like the words, when they're incongruent with the being, we're like, disconnect, right? So LUX I love, and nobody has to do anything before that. They can just come play. Understanding men and understanding women are so much about honoring ourselves and each other, instead of thinking people are misbehaving and they should be punished.
Mm-hmm. And I've been to the very first LUX that you ever did a couple years ago. I've been to every in-person workshop you've ever offered multiple times. So if you guys have not experienced Allison's work, you must. If you care about partnership, this is a must watch, must listen to, must participate in. It's going to impact your relationships with your partners, with your family, with your children, with your business partners, and who you get to show up and be in the world. So most definitely go to AllisonArmstrong.com, and I'll also put it in the show notes for you, and continue to explore your life with Allison. As I have, it's been 12 years so far, and I love it. Any final words that you want to close us up with, Allison? Or open us up with, I should say, but we'll officially end the podcast.
Just gratitude. When I was thinking about being here, I thought, okay, I'm going to take my clothes off and run around naked. And as you know, I will do that to serve, metaphorically, mostly. It's one of the things I so appreciate about you, Tiffany, is normalizing what is often treated as weird or freaky or a hallucination, or even worse than that, like you're possessed by evil or something. I just thank you. I just thank you for your stand for who people are and the value of being perceptive, the value of it, and that it is something to own, and it is something to be responsible for and grown up about, and, you know, timing and permission and humility. And it's also priceless. And I just really appreciate that that's what you bring to people. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. I receive it and I thank you. Much love.
Thank you for listening to Soul of an Empath with Tiffany Cano. If you enjoyed this show, please rate and recommend it on Apple Podcast, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you are listening to it. You can get more information from soulofanempath.com. May you be blessed with love, health, peace, joy, spiritual oneness, prosperity, and abundance. So be it. So be it. So be it.